What is up, freaks? Welcome back to Tales from the Crypt. It's your boy Marty Bent here in a studio on the left coast in the beautiful city of San Francisco. It's a cool city. The first time I was here, I got robbed. Haven't been robbed yet since I've been here. But this is yet another episode of Rabbit Hole Recap. We're recording remotely. Matt, how the hell are you doing in Brooklyn?
Hey, Marty, why are you in San Francisco?
I've got some people to meet. Interviewing Jack tomorrow. Wanted to check out, get into some nicer weather as well. The weather's beautiful here today.
Oh yeah, you went over for the weather.
Around the city.
I love it.
Yeah. Before we hop into topics, this episode of Rabbit Hole Recap is brought to you by Honey Miner. You guys know the deal. Honey Miner is the best place to earn Bitcoin with your extra computing power that you have laying around, any extra hardware, any GPUs. Honey Miner is a software that you can use. Download it. Go to stackingsats.com. Again, that's stackingsats.com. That's our specific ref link. Download Honey Miner today. If you got Linux, Windows, computers, the software is there for you. Mac is coming soon. Go to stackingsats.com. All right, Matt, we got a lot to talk about this week. Let's start off with something cool. Casa HODL today announced a pretty cool suite of products. In particular, they're coming out with an iOS and an Android app for their multi-sig solutions, and they have multi-tiered levels of sort of yearly plans that users can interact with. That was one knock people had on them in the past, is that their $10,000 multi-sig sort of product and solution was a bit of a high price point. I think they've heard the cries from the users, and they're making this multi-sig product available to the masses via lower pricing tiers. So there's three tiers. There's a free tier for two or three multi-sig, $1,800 tier, correct? $1,800?
There's four tiers. Free tiers, with the 10 basis points if you use it, $300 a year, $1,800 a year, and $5,000 a year.
Correct. And so, yes, and also, importantly, they're coming out with iOS and Android apps through which you can access these multi-sig schemes, and which is huge for the UX of sort of taking advantage of these multi-sig transactions. That's one thing I will say up to this point. People have not been taking advantage of multi-sig as much as they should, myself included. And part of the reason being that the UX around it is pretty piss poor, or you have to be, not piss poor, but you have to be pretty technically apt to make it happen. And Casa is working on making it easier. Matt, what are your thoughts? Matt, you there?
Yeah, exactly. And the thing is, the way it works is you have your phone is one key. The app on your phone is one key. They hold one key. And then you have a hardware wallet that holds another key. So it's two of three. So you need two of those keys to spend it. And then they have the 3 of 5 plan, which starts at 1800. And then in that case, you add two more hardware wallets to the mix.
You're correct. One thing that you want to bring to people's attention is just know if you're using the 2 of 3 and 3 of 5, correct?
No, if you're using the 2 of 3, if you're using the 2 of 3,
two of three.
It's worse because it's the app is closed source, and presumably you're just going to update it if you get an update too. So it's like, in a worst case scenario, that key is hot, and they have, you know, kind of they have access to it. So don't keep large amounts in the 2 of 3. The 3 of 5 is immune to that, you know, to a degree, because you have the hardware wallets. They need one of the hardware wallets to be able to spend the money.
Yeah, and we're not saying that Casa would ever try to pull an attack like this. It's a trust, don't verify situation.
No, and they have a great team.
Don't trust, verify. Excuse me, I messed that up.
They have a great team, and they just open source the Casa node. I assume they're going to open source, you know, the majority of the app, if not the whole thing. And I think they know it's a concern, so we'll see if how they approach it going forward. But for now, don't use the free product. Don't use it with lots of funds, you know. The two of three.
Yeah, and shout out to Jeremy, Jameson, Elena, and team. Thank you for pushing the edge on the UX with multi-sig. It's very important. And pushing the ball a little bit further. That's just what we got to do. Keep pushing. A little bit at a
time. I think it's a really big deal because, like, like you said, it makes multi-sig completely user-friendly. You know, because especially at the higher levels, they have customer support. They have, like, 24/7 customer support. So, like, that's fucking huge.
Right. Yeah. This is a service I may be using in the future. Next topic, Facebook coin. Can Facebook succeed where Bitcoin failed?
What a fucking headline, man.
Matt. Bitcoin failed, Matt. It's done. It's over. Nathaniel Popper. It's dead.
I mean, Facebook can't compete with Bitcoin. You know, they don't want to compete with Bitcoin, and they can't even if they wanted to, because, you know, they're gonna make it centralized. It's gonna be censorable. I doubt there's gonna be any kind of privacy involved. You know, they're not a big privacy company. Just be a stable coin, some token. Probably, my guess is like it's gonna be on like Stellar, but
yeah. Do you think Facebook can out Coinbase in terms of Orwellian snooping and enablement of fascists?
Well, I think like the big fear is not the stable coin. If they come out with a stable coin, like then whatever, it's like kind of a adoption driver for Bitcoin. It can only help, I think. But if they actually came out with like a Bitcoin wallet, or like you know, maybe with like Ethereum and a couple other alts in it, and then they used all the data they already had to monetize the chain analysis portion of it, like just use the wallet, give the wallet to 2 billion people, give them all a bunch of money, and be like, you can store your crypto here. You know, they could I think they would definitely give Coinbase, there wouldn't be Facebook would be the most evil company in the space automatically.
Yeah, I think you just shivered there a little bit. I saw you get a little freaked out thinking about using a Facebook wallet.
Well, you know, I have this, I like almost deleted this tweet that I tweeted out like a couple months ago, where I was like, if Facebook was really smart, that's what they would do. Because that data, they could monetize the fuck out of that data. It's super easy to monetize.
Yeah. Just send retailers straight to the people shopping out there all the time.
Yeah, and imagine if like WhatsApp had a wallet, you know, like they instantly are already in everyone's pockets. They would become the dominant wallet in the space, like automatically, I think.
Yeah, that would be a shame. Yeah, but it's possible. Could definitely happen.
Yeah, I really hope it doesn't. Hopefully they just do this token. That's what I'm hoping for.
Yeah. We'll see. No release date, no details on the underlying mechanics of Facebook's coin. We'll keep you abreast of this situation as it unfolds, as you know we always do here at the Rabbit Hole Recap. On to another blog from the New York Times. This one much better, though. It was dropped in the op-ed section this Sunday, titled Bitcoin Saved My Family, about a man in Venezuela who was doing freelance work to receive Bitcoin as payment, and it was basically just a very good human interest story in the New York Times with a positive spin on Bitcoin for a change in the mainstream. Matt, what are your thoughts?
It was just a really touching, nice firsthand experience, told through his lens, and I really appreciated him sharing his experiences. You know, he talks about a lot of the usefulness that Bitcoin provides, whether that's you know, remittances, getting money in and out of the country, crossing the border with money, and the big one that I was that I focused on was the fact that his brother got paid for freelance work online, like graphic design and stuff. And when you start thinking about that, like as we move to a more digital world, like it starts getting really, I mean, for lack of like badass, but that you could be anywhere in the world and just get paid pseudo-anonymously. Maybe your employer doesn't even know your name or anything, or where you live, or anything like that. The kind of access that gives is crazy.
What is it, the Mechanical Turk? You just do like a completely a non-Mechanical Turk-like system, and you can pay out with Bitcoin.
Oh, well, like Mechanical Turk, though, is like brutal. You know, like that's that's like almost like click farm level, right? Like Mechanical Turk, like that's like Amazon.
I'm not sure. I've never used it.
I always thought that was like.
I thought it was like contracted jobs on the internet.
I mean, I guess more like a Fiverr or something, right? Like where you're getting paid.
Yeah, Fiverr's.
Yeah.
Fiverr's a better
Mechanical
example.
Turk, I think you get paid like cents. Like, I don't know. I think it's like really. But I'm not sure. I might be wrong. I might be misspeaking on that. But yeah, that's like a perfect example.
No, and I could be wrong as well. But back to the Venezuela angle, too. There's another thing that we didn't have on the list. But it's, I mean, obviously in Venezuela, it's helping citizens. As evidenced by that op-ed in the New York Times this week, but it's also helping the Maduro regime, which is starving the starving a lot of people in the country and causing this hyperinflationary economy and the situation that Venezuela finds itself in. And it seems as though like what they're doing with the Petro, they're trying to goad people. It's like giving up their Bitcoin and goods for Petro. Seems as though the Maduro regime is trying to like hoard or collect a lot of Bitcoin.
Yeah, or at least like individuals within the regime, right?
Yeah, and there was something about having to register.
Miners.
Yeah, there was something more particular this week. I forget, and I don't have access to the internet here, so I can't pull it up right now. But just be abreast of that as well. It's going on. It works. For evil people and for good people. Bitcoin is amoral, as you freaks that listened to my discussion with Monsieur Mamadov know.
Oh, that was a great episode, by the way. Absolute fire. Complete bull fuel. I just wanted a market buy afterwards, you know.
Yeah, I ran into my apartment, picked my wife up, spun her around, then bought some sats on the
stacking
cash app.
Started
stacking sets.
The other thing I wanted to highlight about the Venezuela article was he talked about crossing the border. And like,
okay,
before Bitcoin, how the hell do you cross a border that's like a hostile border that's searching you and shit?
I mean, that's my favorite quote about Bitcoin, is like when I'm trying to describe it to newcomers, is like, you can walk around the world naked with millions of dollars in your mind, like the power to think that you can hold Bitcoin in a brain wallet, which most people that are crossing borders probably aren't even doing. But even just like a seed phrase on a piece of paper, you have a better chance of hiding than a bar of gold. So being able to cross borders is huge, especially for people stuck in these countries like Venezuela.
Yeah, you like bring like a couple books and you like write your seed in different pages, you know, like different word in different pages.
Exactly.
Or something like that.
Yeah, and again, like that's, I have had a lot of people come to aha moments describing it that way. Like, you can walk across every border on earth naked with millions of dollars in your head. Nobody
would
know.
It's so fucking powerful. That's crazy to me. So to have like, you know, a lot of us say stuff like this, but this is like a firsthand experience of this actually, you know, helping someone. That's pretty fucking cool. I mean, it's unfortunate that it's happening, of course, but it's cool that it helped. Yeah,
it's the beauty of Bitcoin. It enables people to have a chance to preserve their wealth in these trying times, and in their trying times, excuse me. But again, it does come with a lot of risk. If you lose that piece of paper, you could lose a lot of wealth. So if you're sneaking Bitcoin across borders in that fashion, just be extra careful, I would argue. And I can't speak from experience. So,
well, you could have like like a Casa HODL 3 of 5 setup, and
yeah, I actually can speak from experience.
You could sneak across treasures, you know, and leave one treasure at home. Sneak across, like leave one treasure at home with like a cousin or something, then you sneak across with two, and then you could use Casa's third key to access your funds when you get across, and then you don't even have to risk losing it.
But I would argue even like a treasure would be a little too risky crossing borders, especially if you're getting like strips.
Well, the open dimes are purposely shaped so you can use your nature's pocket. He rounded the edges supposedly so that it wouldn't scrape you up.
Yeah. Thank you, Rodolfo, for thinking of that user experience. Really thinking through the user experience on that product. Yeah, I think Loom Darts joked about that before. I think I've seen him do that. You cannot stick a Trezor up there. That would not feel well.
No, yeah, exactly. A Ledger could possibly work.
Ugh.
Next topic.
Okay, enough about hiding hardware wallets in your ass. On to Square. They sold 10,000 Bitcoin in Q4 2018. It's pretty huge. They got increasing volumes month on month, quarter on quarter, it seems. Seems like people are using the Cash App to sack sats. I don't know if we helped out on their Q1 numbers last weekend, Q1 2019 numbers. I like to think we did. I think we'll find out.
Well, I mean, stacking sats probably didn't help, but we've been shilling the shit out of Cash App for like such a long time now. I mean, since I got on the pod, we were shilling it. And then I was shilling it on Twitter before then. You were shilling it on the pod before I got on. Like, we've been shilling this a long time.
Well, it's a really good product. I'm going to shill it. And it makes buying Bitcoin easy. You can send it off the exchange right away. Yes, they have shut down. And that's the other thing. I actually had this conversation with somebody earlier this week, Parker Lewis, on a phone call. And it's another thing people have to realize. Square is a regulated business, and if people are using their app to do what is deemed by the eyes of the law sketchy, and they have to shut down your account, they will. That doesn't mean that Bitcoin doesn't work. If you're doing sketchy stuff, don't do it on the Cash App. Do it from your
regardless of what you do after the Cash App. You should always withdraw to Wasabi first, then mix it, and then continue on. So then, you know, Then no one, both of you don't care about the other after that point. You know, Cash App doesn't just want to know what you're doing.
Maybe that's a feature we can ask for.
Auto Wasabi.
Yeah, before you send the coins out.
No, if they do, it defeats the purpose. Then they're like facilitating it. You got to just, they'll never tell you to do it. We're here to tell you to do it. And then everyone wins.
That's true.
But this chart is fucking dope. It just goes up. It's like my favorite type of chart.
Yeah. Somebody, I don't know if it's on Twitter where I saw it, but like somebody put a parabolic drive on the tip of the chart.
Yeah, I saw that. That was dope. It's the
brought back some
the
memes.
Best kind of TA. Because
the chart does look parabolic. Square in the news again. It looks like they just reapplied, I believe, for a banking license. So it looks like they're moving forward to try to become a legitimate bank as well. Which actually brings up an interesting topic. Are banks bad, or is the unsound money that banks are built on the core of the problem? Matt, what are your thoughts?
What are your thoughts, Marty?
I think there are potential to be good banks in the future. It just depends on what the services you ask for. With that being said, we do have the ability to be your own bank now. That is why Bitcoin is a thing. I don't know. I go back and forth. Like, do you want it comes down to the question of, do you want all the risk in-house, or do you want to spread some of that risk to a third party and then also leverage services that they offer? I could see myself being open to that in the future. I don't know about right now. I think it's a little too early, but no, it's definitely something you have to weigh, and I think there could be a place for ethical, good Bitcoin banks in the future.
I think banks aren't bad necessarily, but like big banks are bad. Like they have like that chart of the banks in America where it just consolidates.
We'll share a link to that chart. That is a scary chart, like showing how, especially after like 08, 09, like just like everybody after everybody failed in consolidating their portfolios.
And then the big ones got bailed out, and then gobble, gobble, gobble.
Yeah. I guess this is a good thought experiment, or get into a thought experiment. Like, how do we avoid that going into the future with Bitcoin banks?
Well, part of the reason is because of a lot of the regulation towards the banking sector, like, it hurts. It's worse for smaller banks proportionally because the fees and stuff that they have to take care of all of that, yeah, that mess.
So the BitLicense is a perfect example of an unnecessary barrier to entry that would sort of inhibit the proliferation of many Bitcoin banks in New York State in particular. So yeah, maybe regulatory hurdles are the biggest sort of biggest thing holding these banks back.
But do you think we'll really have like Bitcoin banks like in a post Bitcoin world? Like,
I don't know. I can imagine it. I mean, I can imagine it because that's the way I've grown up my whole life, is interacting with the bank, and maybe envisioning a future without one is hard.
I was thinking maybe like small local banks that do like,
yeah,
lending and stuff, like things banks do.
Yeah, I mean, let's just be real. Like, there's going to be lending. There's going to be people taking out loans. There's going to be levels of debt in the future. It's just you're not going to be able to base your money supply off of debt in a Bitcoin world.
It does start
this interesting conversation. Like, what does a potential banking world look like in the future? And is there even one? Like, are we going to be our own banks? Is the meme going to come into reality? Will the UX get to a point where everybody will be able to feel comfortable being their own bank? Maybe. I hope so. That would be chill.
I mean, but like fractional reserve banking is fucked, right?
Yeah. Yeah. And the banks in the future that I envision when I'm thinking about this, they'll just be offering services that allow you to leverage your Bitcoin to do other stuff.
Because if fractional reserve banks are fucked, like there's no way like the current crop of banks can survive that switchover, right?
Switch over to
full capitalization. Like if there's like a run on the bank scenario, which is like kind of inevitable,
no,
right? Eventually it's just like a when, not if.
I don't know if it's going to be a bank run per se, but I think there could be a collapse of confidence. I don't think people are going to be running to ATMs, but.
Oh yeah. No, I don't mean like, yeah, bank run's the wrong word. I mean, like, over time, if you can store your money, your wealth, in a fixed supply asset that's like a harder money that you can custody yourself, why would you store money in a fractional reserve bank?
That's a good question, Matt. I don't know why you would.
Yeah. So, like, slowly, actually, there'd be, like, a slow bank run-ish that would, like, heat up. You know what I mean? Like, over time.
Well, this is the speculative attack.
Yeah.
That's like what you're
describing. Yeah, there you go. That's the word. Term.
Yeah. So, that's what... So, if you haven't checked out Pierre Richard's incredible 2014 article on a speculative attack, definitely go check that out at thenakamotoinstitute.org. Incredible piece. But yeah, so a speculative attack is basically a tipping point when people realize that Bitcoin is harder money and they start taking loans out in fiat currency to buy more Bitcoin.
Oh, right.
And
I love that. I love that piece.
Yeah. Yeah. So yeah, that speculative attack, that could be possible. But again, even in a speculative attack, again, it goes back to the underlying asset of what these banks are operating on. So the argument for Bitcoin banks is like, hey, not all banks are bad. It's the fractional or reserve nature of them, and then the underlying currency that they're built on. If you're building a bank on a sound money, Bitcoin, which is auditable at any moment, it doesn't allow the bank to take on as much risk as the current banking system has, and that is arguably what has allowed our banking system to become so concentrated. Is they've taken so much risk that they sort of had to socialize the losses and consolidate.
And we got into this topic because of Square. You know, this is all like long-term talk that we were just having. In the short term, like, we're still going to need fiat. We're going to need fiat connections. Square's like probably the most likely to be like the first debit card that really actually works. If they mm-hmm. start allowing deposits into their, right now deposits are still not enabled, and I'm guessing that's why, because they don't want to build like a wall between your sold Bitcoin and the debit card, but at the same time they can't give you debit card access. And the main thing stopping all the debit card access is regulations and stuff. It's just like ridiculous hurdle. So if anyone could do it, it's right. probably Square. And you know, like I said, they're a custodial wallet. You shouldn't keep large amounts of money on them. You should just immediately withdraw through Sabi, right? And they're a nice on ramp, and in the future they might be a nice way to spend Bitcoin if you wanted to.
True. I really like that discussion on potential future Bitcoin banks. We'll have to dive into that in further detail in the future. Maybe, like, am I ever going to interview again? Or are we always just going to do rabbit hole recaps? Are we ever just going to expound upon non-topical stuff?
Who are you ever going to interview?
I want to get
interview me again?
Yeah.
No, do we?
I want to get caught.
We can do it. We can do it. I'm always happy to.
I want to get cosmic with you. I feel like we don't get to get as cosmic on this topical shit.
We just don't do it on the air.
It's true. Next one, Coinomi. Spell check bug. This is so brutal.
This one really hurt.
This is a shitcoin wallet, right?
It's like the best shitcoin wallet, though.
Yeah. So somebody got 60 grand ganked, right?
Supposedly, yeah.
Yeah, so Coinomi, for you freaks that don't know, it's a wallet, and it basically came to the fore this week that the wallet software has a spell check feature where it's looking to see if your seed phrase words are spelled incorrectly or correctly, and that just so happens to be released in the logs if you're following along via keystroke.
It was for the longest time Coinomi was Android only. And then they released mm-hmm. on iPhone, and the iPhone wallet space isn't that good. It's, you know, Apple had banned wallets for like the longest time, and they were like one of the better iPhone wallets. And then they recently released a computer wallet, a desktop wallet.
It's a desktop wallet.
Right. It wasn't even just like their own spell check. It's sent to Google spell check. So it went.
So they're sending seed phrase. Oh, so that was the other thing. So this guy is claiming that somebody from Google stole his crypto.
I mean, it went to Google servers. It was encrypted in with just, you know, HTTPS or whatever, SSL. That's just really bad. But so maybe someone who had access to Google servers, maybe someone in between, maybe his computer was, you know, like he's. Oh, the other thing is, like, it's only if... I'm not trying to victim blame here. Like, Coinomi, like, can go fuck themselves. Like, you should probably never use that wallet unless you're in a pinch. Because they handled it really well afterwards. Handled it really horribly afterwards. But it was only if you were recovering your seed phrase. So when you're entering your seed phrase on a computer... he could add a keylogger or something that pulled it. There could have been other things that did it. He was Coinomi's closed source. The seed was from Exodus, which is another multi-coin wallet on the computer. So that's also closed source. He had that installed on his computer. Who knows what other crypto stuff he had installed on his computer. So it's not sure if that's where he lost it, but either way, like, Coinomi should give him some money the money he lost because he found the bug, and they should say we're sorry and that they really fucked up and like admit that they were wrong. They've supposedly fixed it on the desktop wallet. The phone never had the issue to begin with, and but they should have, you know, taken the blame. But it is a closed source hot wallet, so regardless, you shouldn't, like, the guy's like, I lost my life savings. You shouldn't have your life savings on Exodus or Konomi.
Yeah, that's stupid.
Yeah, it's a hot wallet. Like, this is why, like, at least use a hardware wallet. And really, you should be doing cold storage.
Yeah, not a hardware wallet. Use like three or four. Like,
yeah, exactly.
Diversify your risk. Diversify your risk, freaks.
Now multi-sig is more accessible, right? So that's good.
Yeah. No, that's really... I can't wait to test that product out. That's... I mean, talk about UX improvement. That's just... That's a level up right there. Shout out Casa again. Other hardware... While we're on the topic of a hardware wallet, Trezor and Ledger update reminders. Reminder to update your software. Is this after the demonstrations of the supply chain attacks?
Trezor just updated today for the wallet.fail attacks. The update came out today.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
The Ledger is an older update, but the severity of the update came out, and it was like is really bad. So just like if you haven't updated yet, like that was a couple months ago, like make sure you update that before you do anything else.
Yeah, if you have a Trezor or Ledger out there, make sure you update. Make sure you have your seeds backed up beforehand. Make sure you check off the box. Is there like a checklist we can provide the freaks of what you should do before updating or porting funds from a hardware wallet?
Well, always make sure your seed is good.
Yeah.
You know, I would want to look into it more before I gave any hard rules. Just make sure you don't do it haphazardly. Like, watch all the steps as you do it. I'm like, updating hardware wallets for me still is like a little bit questionable because
it's stressful.
No, because it's not even stressful. Like the authorization process for it. Like I wish I could easily. Like the regular update process doesn't let you like confirm that you're getting the right software or that it's secure or whatnot. So actually what I like to do is. Yeah. Is when an update comes out, like I wait a little bit just to see if anyone else has any issues. But I think we can make it.
Are we giving conflicting advice here?
We can make it better. Well, the Trezor, before you use them, you should definitely update them.
Okay.
The Trezor update has like, when I update, I always, I don't know.
Yeah. We'll get you some hardcore update advice in the future. Something we'll think on.
I'm like trying to remember the last time I updated my Trezor, it was, you know, you have to like, you put it into the firmware open mode and you're like on their, you're on their website. And like, I don't keep that much money on hardware wallets. So I've never looked into like, how do I manually verify the signature of the download or anything like that, but it doesn't see like, I feel like a regular user should be able to confirm exactly what update is coming in, maybe like confirm a hash on like four different things that shows on the device or something like that. Like there's a lot of issues still with like the actual update process.
It's another UX pain point to think about. But that's why we test these things out. That's why we use them. That's why we have people like you who have crazy adversarial mindset to point these things out.
But the important thing is just make sure you have your seed written down when you update.
Yeah, make sure you have your seed. Make sure you have it close. Do not lose that.
And one tip I like, one trick I like is you get a second hardware wallet, right? And you activate it with the same exact seed. And then that way, not only do you have your backed up seed, you know, you have like a backed up hardware wallet that's still like activated on that seed and everything. It makes you feel a lot more comfortable.
Never heard that one. I like
that. Yeah, it's like what, $60 more, $80 more, whatever it is, worth it.
But does that expose you to more meat space risk?
Well, I mean, if you stored them
just by having,
if you store them in the same place, then it's exactly the same. That's right. True. And then if you want to store them in different places, then
that would make it a little riskier.
But it also, if like one place burns down, then you still have your, you know, your Trezor or your Ledger.
You shouldn't have your your seed and your treasure together if you, in your house if it's burning.
Yeah, don't keep your you shouldn't keep them together. There's a lot of tips. There's like you gotta really think on it, man. You gotta get a nice bottle of whiskey and get really paranoid, but not too paranoid because a lot of people lose their own shit. So don't go too crazy. Just reasonably crazy. Yeah, right.
With some elaborate scheme.
Yeah, don't do too elaborate. Don't go too crazy.
Staying on the wallet tip, software wallet Samurai Whirlpool in the testing phase. It's running on one of our favorite hardware nodes, Noddle. So the Noddle guys are testing out Whirlpool. You are our resident expert, CoinJoin. A resident CoinJoin expert, excuse me. What does this mean, Matt?
So Whirlpool is Samurai's version of Wasabi, right? The zero link framework that they worked on together.
Mm-hmm.
So it's another CoinJoin implementation. I think their intention is to both run it on mobile and like run it on the Dojo, which is their node in a box
hardware wallet.
The big difference is that they want to, it's going to be like a maker taker model, like Join Market is. So you can, if you provide liquidity to the system, you get paid, you get a fee from all the coin joins that are done. So presumably it will mean that there'll be more liquidity. There'll be more people constantly putting coins in because they'll want to get paid for it.
Yeah, I once heard a very wise man say, privacy loves company. So just another avenue through which to make this type of privacy easier. Again, UX is the theme, making Whirlpool, or excuse me, CoinJoin UX easier via Whirlpool. Shout out to Samurai for pushing that ball forward.
And then
what do you think? Do you think from a cost perspective, what's it like? Do you think it's going to be manageable?
What do you mean?
Is it come with like a obvious, well, come with increased fees for those transactions?
I don't know what the fee structure is going to be. If it's anything like Join Market, mm-hmm. the people providing liquidity will set the prices and it'll be like a market situation. The more liquidity, the cheaper the prices, people will drive it down. Mm-hmm. I think, you know, it's hard to put a cost on privacy, but it'll probably be pretty negligible. It's going to have to go. Wasabi's fee is, I think, like 0.003% per anonymity set. So, like, the more times you run it, the, you know, your fee goes up a little bit. But it's a negligible fee. It's, like, it's basically nothing. So, if they're not... Originally, I thought they were going to share liquidity pools, but it looks like they're not going to share the same liquidity pool, but they'll look similar in the transactions. If they have to... They're technically like anyone who wants to mix coins is going to decide between Wasabi or Whirlpool, most likely, or I guess Join Market. But I think the UX issues Join Market has, you probably won't see it there. So it's going to drive the fees down on Whirlpool to like a Wasabi level. So it'll be probably negligible regardless. But it's good to see more options out there, you know?
True. Yeah. And that's why we have you, our resident privacy expert. And staying on...
And what's nice is they're testing Tor support on the Samurai wallet. The Samurai wallet already has Tor support, but it requires a separate app. They're testing right now having it completely integrated into the app. So you just run the app and it automatically uses Tor and connects to your Dojo through Tor. And then that's a prerequisite for them to be able to run Whirlpool on your phone. So you'd be able to have like in a mobile wallet, just like constantly like mixing your funds and getting paid for it. If you provide liquidity, like that's pretty fucking cool.
So do you see this becoming like a more popular wallet type, like an industry leader, like where people will actually prefer like the Wasabi because of the privacy via Tor and then the potential to make fees via Whirlpool? Like, what I'm trying to get at here is, like a beautyonism of basically make it the way Samurai is, and everybody will have to raise up to your level and just naturally have these privacy functionalities embedded.
Well, I mean, I think Samurai is already the best mobile wallet on Android and on Android or iOS, and but it's not on iOS yet, right? So like that's the first step for their mobile domination.
Like if anything's made me want to buy an Android, it's Samurai. Like I've seriously contemplated.
Oh, I forget it. You don't get to use Samurai. Samurai's fucking awesome. I used.
I know.
They.
I get them free shields. I never used it. Does that make me a useful idiot?
No, you know you're shilling a good product because we vouch for it.
Yeah, I trust you. I allocate some trust to you.
We were talking about the UX around replaced by fee transactions. Mm-hmm. And I was using Samurai yesterday and someone sent me it was Crypto Brecky. He sent me the transaction through Gotenna, the test transaction mm-hmm. through Gotenna, and he used a one Satoshi per byte fee, like a no fee. And it was just sitting there for like 4 hours, just like unconfirmed. And I clicked it.
Well, I actually saw...
Because I was looking at it, and they have built-in child pays for parent. And it says boost transaction on the bottom. I clicked it. I had no funds in my wallet. I clicked it. It said, what fee do you want to do? And I pressed confirm, and it sent out a little child transaction from his funds coming in, his unconfirmed funds coming in, and it confirmed like the next block.
That's pretty crazy. Talk about UX. Holy shit.
The UX was fucking fantastic. It was super simple.
Yeah. And sorry I was interrupting you there a little bit. I just wanted to bring to light, like I noticed that the Bitcoin unconfirmed transaction bot's been going off a little bit. It seems like more recently I've seen more like 15,000 transactions in the mempool situations. Not terribly high, but mempool is getting a little bit busier than it has been in the past few months, or past 6 months in particular.
It's getting a little bit frothy.
Getting frothy in there. Sign of the bottom? We don't know. We don't try to predict price here.
Well, I noticed there was like a big transaction spike after like Luke's 300 kilobyte proposal like started to get a little bit more steam again. So I thought I was like a little bit tinfoily about that. The other funny thing is BitMEX does their withdrawals at 9 a.m. Eastern every day. So like mm-hmm. the worst time to send a transaction is between like 9 and 11 a.m. because they just overload the mempool. It's fucking pretty crazy.
It's pretty crazy that we can know it's them. Right? That's the beauty of Bitcoin.
And they also say, like, we are processing withdrawals at this time every day. It's like their shtick.
But it's a good shtick to have. It's a very smart way to do withdrawals once a day. I think that decreases the attack surface significantly. Next topic here, TweetStamp. I saw you... I saw you tagging these guys in a bunch of tweets of people making bold predictions. Uses Open Timestamps. How's it different from Open Timestamps? That's something I don't. Did Open Timestamps sort of wind down a little bit with their Twitter bot?
Yeah, just the Twitter bot, like, kept. I think it kept getting suspended.
OTS proof bot?
Yeah, I think it kept getting suspended. And it was only for. I don't think you could. Reply to someone in OTS proof bot them, right? It had to be in your own tweet. You had to reply. You had to reply. It was like the same idea, but they all got suspended. And I like the name Tweet Stamp. And they have a good
tweet _ stamp.
Yeah, they have a nice interface. And
it says explain the service for all the freaks that don't know what it is out there. You can basically.
It's like
tag this bot.
Yeah, you archive it and they hash it and then they put it in the Bitcoin blockchain. So, and then they give you a site for it. So you have a link that you can go and see the link. It's like archive.is or .org or whatever.
boss.
It just
let's go check it out. We'll put their link in the bio of this episode.
But like instead of archiving someone's whatever take, if you don't want them to delete it, you can just go at tweetstamp stamp, and then it just creates an archive link and then hashes it into the chain.
Eternity.
That's pretty fucking cool.
Yeah, people thousands from years right from now will look into the Bitcoin blockchain and see Matt Odell embedding tweets of bad takes into the Bitcoin blockchain.
It's beautiful.
You're not actually embedding tweets into the blockchain.
It's just a hash. It's just a hash. It's just like
yeah, it's just a hash.
It's proof of existence that it existed. If you take the content of the tweet and run it through the same hashing algorithm, you'll get the same result. So you can prove that existed at that time.
Mm-hmm.
That's pretty cool.
Very cool. Very cool. We got three more topics here. Torpedo vulnerability affects all four major U.S. carriers, allows stingrays to be effective against newer phones in determining location, phone identifier, and potentially intercepting calls and texts. This is a story out of TechCrunch earlier this week. About security flaws in new 4G and 5G services that proclaim to be immune to certain Stingray attacks. And Stingray attacks are basically the mobile... What would you call them? Cops use them. They put them
like
on the back
fake
of their cars
cell towers.
To track cell phone data.
They're like fake cell towers, and they like dupe your phone into giving up its location and its
metadata,
the identity of the phone, calls, texts.
This became popular, entered the public consciousness, during the Ferguson riots, I believe, because the cops and the riot police had Stingray machines on the back of their cars and were able to sort of see what these protesters were doing and react in a way. So that's just an example of sort of Orwellian overstep, I would argue, from law enforcement in particular. And it seems we thought we were going to get some comfort in 4G and 5G, knowing that our information was not vulnerable to these attacks, but it looks like they will be, which isn't shocking. Are you shocked about this?
No. I already assumed they could do it, but they said it was for $200 too, which is like pretty crazy. You should use like encrypted chat apps and stuff. Don't use text. It's basically like a postcard. Like Signal, you can do phone calls. Telegram's encryption is questionable, but it's better than a text message or a phone call. You go to protests or something, anywhere that you don't want to be, you pull out you can't even pull out your battery anymore. You turn off your phone, I guess, and just pray. Leave it at home.
Just throw it in the trash and start
leave
running.
It at home. Leave your phone at home. Maybe have like a prepaid.
Yeah. No, it's fucked that they can do this. I don't even know how we can like talk about getting around this because I have no idea how you would do it.
Well, like I've noticed it. So like you notice it. In New York, you see it a lot, but it's like in like major events, baseball games, U.S. Open, stuff like that. Like the train stations, in those kind of locations, protests, like we said, that's where they use them. You should probably just operate under the assumption that they can track the location of your phone at any time. The problem with Stingrays is that, like, it's not just the government or Google that could do it. If you can do it off the shelf parts for $200 or $300, that's not great.
Yeah. So that's what this article revealed is that any nefarious actor with access to the parts to make the Stingray can do it for, like you said, $200, which is a pretty low price point for this type of spying material.
Nope, not great. Just assume it. Just be aware.
Yeah, very good segue topic to our next one. A new privacy wiki came out recently by this dude, Chris Belcher. He just dropped it out of nowhere. And it's one of the most thorough pieces I've read on Bitcoin privacy to date. It's en.bitcoin, bit.ly/wiki/privacy. It'll obviously put the link in the show notes, but one of a single location where you can go how to operate with complete privacy in Bitcoin. It's very hard work, but the instructions are there.
I gotta have a domain redirect for that URL.
Have you gotten through the whole thing?
It's really long. It's a great resource. Definitely should check it out.
Check that out. And what is this Boltathon virtual lightning conference?
We need more of this.
I haven't seen it.
Physical conferences. It's a virtual conference.
What is it?
It's a virtual conference. Pierre's going to be speaking in it. Lightning Koala is going to be speaking in it. I think Jeremy Welch is speaking. It's like $10 to view. So like anyone around the world
can
view it.
This is so smart. Whoever thought about this is so smart.
And they only accept Lightning. But
only
they
Lightning.
Use Alex Bosworth's submarine swap tool, so you can pay Bitcoin on chain and they receive Lightning.
Really?
That's pretty badass.
That's pretty badass. I was getting a secondhand story about using Alex Bosworth's submarine swaps, and it's like crazy. It works. It works apparently, which is incredible.
Rusty Russell's speaking. Alex is speaking. Rockstar Dev is speaking.
Yeah, actually, Rusty Russell, now that you mentioned him, earlier we were talking about cold storage. He's got probably another, you want to talk about Thero cold storage guide. Rusty Russell's Unremarkable. Or is it Unremarkable or Unreliable? It might be Unreliable. Guide to cold storage. It's a little cheeky title for that explainer in particular.
I really like the Tails OS built-in Electrum for cold storage. You do multi-sig if you want to do warmish, multi-sig hardware wallet, and if you want to do cold storage, you just literally just make a seed. You could do multi-sig cold storage. You make a bunch of seeds, and
yeah,
and you plant them around.
That is true. Well, that was the last of the topics. Do you have anything else you want to chat about?
Got any fun plans tonight in San Francisco? It's early by you, right?
It's only 4:30.
Oh yeah, 4:30. I read my watch wrong. That's good.
I think I'm gonna try to get to a spot to see the sunset, see a West Coast sunset. Hopefully, the clouds don't ruin that. But nothing crazy. I'm gonna get dinner, rest up. Big day tomorrow, obviously.
You said you walked to the apartment, right?
Yeah, I walked here. I walked around this beautiful part of San Francisco. I walked in the wrong door.
Did you see any human
first
shit
first.
On the sidewalk?
No human shit. Saw a lot of dog shit. I stayed in a hotel last night and accidentally booked into the Tenderloin District, so I got a firsthand experience of the problems that plague this city that are popular on Twitter in particular. So I came here, and apparently Sprint doesn't have any service in San Francisco, so I literally have not had access to my phone unless I'm on Wi-Fi, and that led to me walking in the wrong direction for like 30 minutes earlier today, and it was a good scenario getting lost, though. Good city to get lost in. A lot of hills, though.
Wait, you said you use Sprint?
Yeah.
Wow, I didn't know people still use Sprint.
Yeah, we're still holding out. I'm actually getting kicked off the family plan soon. But yeah, we've been a big Sprint family our whole lives.
I just checked back for you to see if they were a four major U.S. operator, but you are affected by the story as well.
God. Well, luckily I don't have any 4G or 5G running on my phone right now, so
I am excited. No opportunity. I'm excited to listen to the Jack episode. I wish you the best of luck with that tomorrow.
Thank you, sir. Thank you, sir.
Say hi to Miles for me, and stay humble and stack sats.
Stack sats, baby. I think we'll end it on that. Peace and love, freaks. Pew!